Fan Junkies Radio is brought to you by FanJunkies.net, where sports meet social networking. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome once again to another episode of Fan Junkies Radio. I am your host, Jonathan Ragus. Alongside me, Mike McShane. Mike, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, how are we doing today, Jonathan? I'm you know, for a cold Monday, I'm really invigorated. I'm excited today.
Wow. Did you take any kind of medication this morning? It's Monday. How can you be invigorated on a Monday morning? Well, Monday afternoon now.
Coming off of a great game yesterday, I thought it was a terrific Super Bowl. We got a great week of radio planned this week.
Absolutely.
You know, it's no sooner we get done with the Super Bowl, and what do we go to? Our sights immediately shift to baseball.
Boo. No, I'm just kidding. I'm actually excited about it. We got spring training coming up, and it's MLB week here. On Fan Junkies Radio.
There you go. That's right.
We have some exciting guests this week. So today joining us is former Philadelphia Phillies and New York Mets outfielder Eric Valente, who is also a very good friend to us here at Fan Junkies Radio. Mm-hmm. He should be calling in at around the 12:15 mark. We'll talk to Eric about his career as well as get the current state of the Phillies and the Mets.
Yep.
Looking forward to that. Big time, Mike.
Absolutely. This is going to be exciting. And then Friday we've got
former Yankees and Diamondbacks catcher Kelly Stinnett.
There you go.
We got to find out from Kelly who's the best catcher in baseball.
There you go.
That's what I'm looking forward to as well. So, but before we get to MLB week, we're going to start with, yes, NFL. Yesterday was the Super Bowl, if you didn't know. And if you didn't know, you must have been hiding out somewhere without any kind of means to TV, radio, or social media.
Yeah, really.
And we had a, you know what, it was a slow game in the first half, Mike. The Ravens were basically taking every mistake the 49ers made and turned it into a touchdown.
Yeah.
We had a 35-minute blackout
right
after halftime after Jacoby Jones ran back a 108-yard kickoff return.
Mm-hmm.
49ers get the ball, and then what happens? Power goes out down in New Orleans for about 35 to 40 minutes. After that blackout, it was a different San Francisco 49ers team. Colin Kaepernick took control, threw for three touchdowns. What did he throw for? One touchdown, threw for 302 yards, kept it going. They almost won, but in the end, the Ravens won the Super Bowl 34-31. Mike, give us some opinions on this game.
I thought it was one of, and you know, you and I were just talking about this pre-show. I thought it was one of the better Super Bowls that I have seen. Now, you know, I think your point's valid. You said, well, it's not the best. No, it wasn't the best. And I can think for a period of time there early, particularly early on, you know, Baltimore had run up, what, a 28-6 lead in the game. They were 22 points ahead.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I was actually starting to sit there and think, oh, my gosh, this game could be over shortly. And yet it turned out to be quite a close game, and I thought very, very competitive. excuse me, a bit of a nail-biter coming right down to the end. And you got to give it to the 49ers for making it competitive. I thought it was a great game to watch.
Yeah, 49ers came back. They made it competitive in the second half. I didn't think it was that competitive in the first half. The 49ers basically gave away that entire first half to the Baltimore Ravens. You know, constant mistakes. We had a fumble lost. Stupid penalties on the 49ers, Mike. There was a lot of questionable penalties, but not because the refs were calling bad calls. It was because of what the 49ers were doing.
And yet, at the same time, I made the observation as I watched the game. It was a low penalty game. There were only seven flags thrown in the entire game.
Yes, but all the penalties for the 49ers came in the first half.
True.
And, you know, it was at times when, you know, they were pushing the Ravens to a fourth and out, you know, and I just didn't know what was going on with the 49ers. It definitely wasn't the 49ers that we have seen this season in the first half of yesterday.
But it didn't surprise me because I think you and I had both talked about this on Saturday a bit. When, you know, I had brought up the question, which Kaepernick are we going to see? Are we going to see the Kaepernick from 2 weeks ago, or are we going to see the Kaepernick from 3 weeks ago?
Yes.
The Kaepernick from 2 weeks ago was standing back in the pocket and throwing the ball. The Kaepernick from 3 weeks ago was running all over the field for 180 yards.
Yes.
Which Kaepernick were we going to see? You had, I thought you were going to be spot on with your analysis. You indicated that you thought we're going to see in the first half, you're going to see the Kaepernick from 2 weeks ago, that pocket passer. But if it didn't work, then potentially we'd be seeing the Kaepernick from 3 weeks ago in the second half.
Yeah.
I actually kind of thought your analysis was going to be spot on with that.
Well, it started out that way after halftime before the blackout. You saw Kaepernick rush for 7 carries and 62 yards. All of a sudden, after the blackout, it was a different story. They were handing off to Gore, who was very effective, 19 carries on 110 yards, one touchdown. But Kaepernick, 16 of 28, 302 yards, Mike.
Yeah.
But you just couldn't translate that into a touchdown.
And when you look at the two quarterback comparisons, really not bad from either one of them. I mean, Flacco, 22 of 33 for 287, three touchdowns, 124.2 QB rating.
Yeah, it was that awful Kaepernick throw to Randy Moss that went to Ed Reed for an interception is what
you
really
killed
that. You know that, the LaMichael James fumble, it just – every time the San Francisco 49ers started to get rolling in that first half and then right before the blackout, they did something stupid, Mike.
Yeah.
Honestly, San Francisco 49ers were a better team, but last night, Baltimore was the better team. So.
Yeah, well, turnovers are going to kill you every time.
Every time.
And it was no more apparent than in last night's game.
Yes, yes. All I got to say is LaMichael James is awful, and I hope to see him cut from the 49ers and hopefully not end up on the Jets. So.
Yeah. One general observation I would make, Jonathan, I don't know how you felt about it. And I say general observation, okay? So I'm not going to point specifically to one thing or another, but
yeah. –
I was unimpressed with both defenses.
Yeah, I was unimpressed as well. Actually, I was very unimpressed in the first half with both. I don't think the low scoring from the 49ers came because the Baltimore defense was so good. I just thought that the 49ers were just stuffing themselves.
Yeah.
With a lot of the penalties, with a lot of the turnovers, and just a lot of stupid plays. But in the second half, I'd have to say that the San Francisco 49ers defense was the better defense in that half and of the night, because they really turned it around in that second half, and they held Baltimore to nothing.
Yeah.
Basically, except for those two Justin Tucker field goals, which, once again, came down to Justin Tucker, like we said, most likely would, Mike.
Exactly right. Exactly right. That's a great point, because I had the notes out. As I'm watching the game, I had the notes up from that I took down on Saturday when you and I were doing the 5 minutes at the Frat House show on Saturday.
Yes.
And I put a big star next to Tucker as he, because we pointed it right out. Both of us said Tucker could be a difference.
Yeah, he's got a booming kick, Tucker. He really does. He's insane.
When you look down the box score for yesterday's game, one glaring statistic that jumps out to me, Jonathan, third down conversions.
Yes.
Third down efficiency. Baltimore 9 of 16. San Fran 2 of 9. All right, goes to show you how ineffective that offense was in the first half.
Yeah, which it goes back to me saying that, I'm not going to say the 49ers handed the Ravens this win, because the Ravens played effective football. They played really good. Joe Flacco was phenomenal yesterday.
Yeah.
But in the same regards, I can clearly say that, the 49ers really, shot themselves in the foot yesterday. So. Just by looking at it, you could tell right away that the 49ers, they shot themselves in the foot yesterday. So that's basically what it is, Mike,
Shot themselves in the foot, and yet, when you make an observation like that one, for somebody who did not see the game, if you say, oh my gosh, San Francisco 49ers shot themselves in the foot, they would be expecting to hear that it was a blowout. It wasn't a blowout. They shot themselves in the foot and still managed to maintain some semblance of keeping the game close.
Yeah, yeah, they definitely did. Kudos to them. They played better in the second half, and it showed, and kudos to the Ravens for winning it. Joe Flacco, to me, that game was all Joe Flacco, Mike, and he deserved every bit of that MVP yesterday.
You made the observation, however, and I'll bring it up just for sake of discussion for a second.
Sure.
That you thought that perhaps the Baltimore defense was showing their age, particularly in the second half, that after the blackout, that in fact that may have had an effect on them.
Absolutely.
you know, we give praise and we're giving a lot of honor here to the Baltimore Ravens for a great game. However, they damn near lost it in the second half with that defense looking a bit shoddy.
Well, you know, like I said, you know what? You have old legs. You know, us as old people, we realize, you know, you can't really – you can walk a lot. You can run a lot. Once you get going, it's fine. But once you rest, you sit down and, you know, your legs start to get sore.
Right.
It's harder to keep them moving and go – you know, you have to go four periods and you have to – excuse me, four quarters – and you have to go through everything. You know what I mean? You have to just keep going continuously. That 40-minute delay right after halftime, that really ruined, I think – you know, some of these vets on the Ravens yesterday, and you saw it in their movements, you saw it in the way they played defense, and it wasn't good for them. So
right, and it was pointed out, you say a 40-minute delay, it really was more like an 85-minute delay, because when you combine in the halftime performance and then throw in the blackout, it was like 85 minutes.
Yeah, it was. It was, you know, and a lot of, you know what, a lot of young guys on the 49ers, Mike, so you saw it shift. You saw it shift big time after that blackout. So
that's an hour and 25 minutes that some of these guys didn't see any action at all.
Yep, absolutely. But it happens, man. What are you going to do? All right, man, we got a quick call here. Big Joe from the Bronx, once again, joining us as always. What's up, Joe?
What's up, gentlemen? How'd you like that Super Bowl?
Yeah, I've seen better, Joe. I've seen a lot better. So it was okay, though. It was okay.
And I, for one, thought it was a good game. I really did. I thought it was one of the better games.
It was a good second half, Joe.
It was a good game. I still think the best Super Bowl I've seen in recent memory was my second favorite team, the St. Louis Rams-Tennessee Titans game. That was an awesome Super Bowl.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Like I said, there's been better. It was a good game, but there's been a lot better. I wouldn't put it up there in the top 10, that's for sure. So.
Oh, no, not at all, not at all. But at least we had a close game. It was competitive. It was a story of two different halves, basically, if you really think about it. I mean, once the power outage kicked in, then all of a sudden it was somebody, when the switch went on again, it was like the 49ers went on along with it. So,
yeah.
You know, two separate football games, and it, you know, it was a good way to cap off the NFL season, in my opinion. So I'm happy with it. You know, now we can focus on a little NBA, some NHL, and then, of course, spring training is less than a week away. So it's a good time of year to be a big sports fan, that's for sure.
No, you got that one right, Joey.
Absolutely, Joe, and I'm sure you're already rocking your Mets gear, man, getting ready, huh?
Yeah, it's funny as you say that, because I have my Mets jacket and sweatshirt, and I have a fitted blue, you know, traditional Mets cap on right now as we speak. So it is funny how you mentioned that.
Very nice,
It sounds like Joey's ready, yeah. I'll tell
you. Oh, yeah, Joey's always ready, man. You know what, I've known Joe for a long time now, and I don't think I've ever seen Joe not wear anything sports-related.
It's a man of my own heart.
I have, you know, much fitter. It drives Tanya crazy, you know, me with the sports gear and whatnot. So, you know, I got to kind of limit it. But trust me, when my teams are doing well, especially come postseason time, like, you know, when the NHL playoffs begin, and the Rangers will be there. There's no doubt about it. You guys know that as well as I do. They will be part of the elite teams that are making a run at Lord Stanley and whatnot. But when the playoff time comes, yeah, I'll be rocking a different Ranger jersey each day and different Ranger cap and the whole, you know, it's like full-blown Rangers mode.
Yeah.
So, by the way, Mike, are you planning on going to the Rangers-Flyers game at your building on March 26th?
You know, I was actually giving it some thought, Joey, but I don't have tickets at this point. Let me put it to you that way.
Well, if you are planning on going to that game, and even you, Jonathan, if you're thinking about going to that game, I have a few friends of mine that are actually making a big plan for myself to take me over there, because March 26th happens to be my birthday.
Oh.
And as a birthday gift to myself, they want to treat me to a Rangers-Flyers game in Philly.
Very nice.
And we're going to go there as a group, and you know, for all who are listening that would like to be a part of that are Rangers fans, by all means, let's make it happen. It's going to be fun, and hopefully the Rangers will bring home a W for my birthday. It'll be the freaking most awesome birthday gift I can ask for.
Well, you know what, man? We'll try to come, and if anything, we'll put Mike in his Flyers jersey. We'll string him up like a pinata, man. We'll have a real birthday.
There you go.
I just wrote the date down here, Joey. I think we're going to have to look into that one.
Yeah, man, it would be great to meet you. So if you can make it happen, absolutely. I say go, man. It'll be fun.
Yep. I agree. I hear you.
Absolutely. We'll definitely talk about that more, Joe. But thanks for calling in, man.
All right, guys.
Take care, man.
Gotta love Big Joe from the.
Yeah, really. I mean, seriously, I think I'm going to look into that March 26th date.
Absolutely, absolutely. But you know what? Now it's time to talk some MLB, Mike.
Oh, there you go.
And we should have our guest here, Eric Valent, former Mets and Phillies outfielder on the line. Eric, is that you?
That's me. How's it going?
What's going on, buddy? How you doing?
Good, good. How you guys doing?
Real good. Thanks for being with us, Eric.
Hey, no problem.
Yeah, thanks for being with us. You know, we're just, it's coming. You know, Super Bowl's over. Here comes baseball, Eric. And, you know, we're excited. You know, it's about time. It's been a long time, and it feels like it's been very long. So we're definitely excited here with baseball season coming up. But first, let's talk a little bit about you. Let's talk a little bit about your career.
Okay.
Played for the Phillies. You played for the Reds. You played for the Mets. Your best season came in 2004 with the Mets. You know what? Out of both of those stops, you know, we're not even going to count the Reds right now. You only played 18 games.
Yeah.
Between Philadelphia and New York, because Mike, you know, Mike, my co-host, he's a Philadelphia fan. You know me for a long time. I'm a Mets fan. Which one was the best stop, man?
Yeah, you're gonna get one of us annoyed here, Eric.
I hear you. You know, I definitely had my most, you know, success as a player with the Mets. But I also have a lot of ties with the Phillies organization, coming up through them as a minor league player, and then making my debut with them, and then now continuing to work for them. So definitely a lot more lasting relationships with the Phillies. So I'd have to say the fight in the Phillies are number one for me.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Eric, you played with Chase Utley at UCLA. Is that right?
Yeah, we played together in AAA as well. Yeah.
Just give us a little flavor of what that was all about. How that was.
Yeah,
you
Chase
guys
came
had
in
a tremendous team at UCLA. You went to the College World Series, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. We had played with a lot of future major leaguers: Garrett Atkins, Troy Gloss, Eric Burns, Jim Parquet. It was a great time at UCLA baseball. We hadn't gone to the World Series probably since around, I think it was like early 70s or late 60s when we went in 1997. So Chase was a freshman when I was a junior. He was a second round pick out of high school by the Dodgers and ended up turning down probably around a half a million or so. I think Troy Gloss kind of same way, turned down that type of money. I think he kind of helped him get to UCLA. Ended up being a great decision for Chase, but hard-nosed player, you know, came to play every day, just like you see in the big leagues, kind of how he was, and since when he probably first started playing baseball.
So the Chase Utley we see right now is pretty much the same way back then in 97.
Yeah, he was, you know, he still had a lot of power for, he really had strong hands and wrists, and got a short swing with a quick bat, so that's going to help, you know, that's what helps him really hit the ball hard and get it out of the ballpark.
Right. What are you doing for the Phils now?
I'm the regional supervisor in the Southeast, so I supervise our three area guys that cover the Eastern Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, Florida, and Puerto Rico. So the primary, my focus of my job is getting cranking up here soon with all the colleges and high schools are start cranking up and right before the June draft here. So we got about 3 months of scouting to get us ready for the draft in June.
Gotcha. Now, let me just stay on Chase Utley for a moment.
Sure.
Since you've had the opportunity to see, you know, you played with him for a long time back when he was younger and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
What's your assessment going into the season with somebody like Utley? I mean, obviously, for us who are Phils fans, we look at him as a key ingredient. And there's yet a lot of, let's say, concern, huh?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think every team is at the crutch of their top players. So, you know, with us, our core is Jimmy Rollins, Ryan Howard, Chase Utley, you know, Roy Halladay, Cliff Lee, Papelbon in the back end, Cole Hamill. So we need those guys to be the foundation of the team. And then, you supplement the pieces, the Michael Youngs, the Ben Reveres, Carlos Ruiz is also a big clog in that lineup. So you need those guys to be the rock and the other guys to have good years. And hopefully you keep everyone healthy in the field and there's a chance you definitely have a playoff caliber team.
Yeah.
So, just to throw it out there right now, the Braves, the Nationals, they're probably the two strongest teams in the National League East right now, Mike. We've talked about that quite a few times.
Yes.
Marlins disbanded. They took a lot of guys off their teams of recently. Mets, you know, they're floating there. They have some good guys. They have mostly young guys.
Yeah.
So, Eric, where do you see the National League East going? Who do you see in first place? Where do you see the Mets and the Phillies finishing up this season?
Well, I, just like you said, I think on paper right now, but prior to the season starting, you look at the Nationals, you know, of course, defending champions in the NL East. Braves have always have a strong team, strong pitching. The Phillies, you know, without injuries, we're going to be right there. And like you said, the Mets, you can see, are kind of a younger team. They're kind of watching how much they spend. They're still want to build. They're not going to kind of go outside the box right now. It looks like they're, you know, maybe a couple more years down the road. And the Marlins, you know, are just kind of, you know, being the Marlins.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's the Marlins as usual. So
can we say based on the way you just listed those, that's kind of the way you think it's going to come down, that it would be the Phils in third and the Mets in fourth?
No, I don't know. You know what? I think it's just going to come down to guys' teams staying healthy. I think the Phillies, the Nationals, or the Braves can pretty much win the division. You know, anybody can win it. I mean, when you look on paper, they all got strong pitching staff. We have strong pitching staff. You got guys that can play defense. You got guys that can hit the ball at the ballpark. So I think it's going to be a very competitive competitive division, barring that all the guys, you know, stay healthy. You know, any team can go down. You know, teams go down with injury, then, hey, it's definitely going to affect it.
Yeah, I actually agree with that, Mike. You know what, we were talking about the pitching staffs here, and you know what, you can't really discount the Mets either, because you got guys like Dylan G, you got Matt Harvey up now. You know, they got some really young guys, John Neese.
Yeah.
So, you know, everybody's got really good pitching in the NL East.
Well, you
yeah,
know,
it's turned into a real good division.
Yeah.
It's an interesting observation, though, that Jonathan made. But at the same time, Eric, I listen to a lot of Philadelphia-based talk radio. And when you listen to the fans calling in and talking about the Phils, the sentiment I come away from is that the vast majority of them are copacetic with the fact that, well, all right, maybe this may not be the Phils' year. That, you know, it's an aging team. That, you know, hey, if we're not going to be in the playoffs, if we don't even make it, that's, you know, in other words, I think the fans are looking at it and saying, this is a team that's going to have to change shortly. Give us a reason right now why we should be thinking that perhaps maybe this Phils team could win the division.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I think, you know, our window, when you look at it, we had won the division for almost 5 years in a row. You know, it's so cyclical, the major leagues, unless you're the Yankees at one time where we constantly could spend money, but now even look at them. They want to stay under the luxury tax threshold. They're not winning at all costs. So, you know, with our core guys, they've been together so long. They are, of course, they are getting up there in age, and we've made a lot of trades to supplement guys at the big league level as well. But, yeah, I think we definitely, when you look at it, if you got a healthy Halliday, a healthy Hamels, and a healthy Cliff Lee, right there, you got Kyle Kendrick, who's definitely a great back end of the starter. You got John Lennon, that can give you a ton of innings, who's been capable of that number five spot. So there's no reason why you look at our lineup where we shouldn't be playoff caliber, barring guys can stay on the field. That's the biggest key. And, again, that's the key with any club.
Right, right.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We always hear that around Philadelphia is the age factor, and you're saying it right now. It's all about health, and you got a lot of guys on Philadelphia in their mid to late 30s.
Right.
So,
yeah,
you know,
we've had a great run. You hope to continue it. You hope to sprinkle in some parts. You hope to have some guys coming up through the farm system. And there's no magic formula. You know, you look at the A's. Everyone's talking, oh, look at the A's. Guess what? No one even talked about the A's for 6 years. Yeah, I mean, they were in oblivion because they're a small market. They can sit there and lose year after year, and then everyone wants to say, oh, wow, they do such a great job. Well, no, because they can lie in the weeds on like a big market team that has to be competitive and financially restrained a little bit like that as well.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, you know what, let's talk a little bit about the farm system then for the Phillies, because you know a lot about that. We're not even going to talk about the Mets because we know already that they have one of the better ones with the Zach Wheelers, the Travis d'Arnaud's now, you know, getting him in the deal from Toronto.
He is an old Philly.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We're happy to have him in New York. So.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's talk about the Phillies, because you don't really hear about a lot of the Phillies minor leaguers. Who are some of the up-and-coming players in the Phillies organization?
I think with all clubs, you got a lot of pitching at the top normally. We got Jesse Biddle, who is a local kid that's going to be in Double-A this year. Big left-handed pitcher who's had a nice steady climb throughout the minor leagues. You got a kid, Jonathan Pettibone, a young pitcher in AAA who's done well. You got Darren Ruff, who kind of made his big league debut last year. Hopefully he can supply the club with a little bit of right-handed power. So you got some younger kids down the way and some pitchers, but right now you got Tommy Joseph, a catcher. You got Sebastian Valle, a catcher. So you got some pieces coming up. And like you say, if you can have a couple of guys every year just kind of sprinkling in and making some type of impact at the major league level, it's good for the club.
Closest moving to the big league would probably be Ruff, yes?
Yeah, because he had already been there. I think the next in line guy is probably, as far as pitch on the pitching side, and maybe you got like a Jonathan Pettibone who ended up going up to AAA last year, had a great year in AA. So maybe he's a guy that's doing well at the AAA level and something some starters needed. Maybe you might be able to see him at some point next year. And then you got catchers, Sebastian Valle, Tommy Joseph, who I think they'd like to see a little bit more seasoning in the AAA, but you never know when there's a need at the big league level and how the guys are performing, down in the system.
There was a lot of talk about the Phils depleting their farm system there a couple of seasons ago when we picked up all the big catchers, or all the big pitchers, rather. And yet they seem to have kind of replenished it pretty quickly.
Yeah, we've always drafted well. And you know what? I mean, people forget, to get the Roy Halladays, to get the Brad Lidges, guess what? You can't give chopped liver. You got to give great players. And everyone's like, guess what? If you want great players, you got to give up some good stuff.
Absolutely.
So that's what happens. And, Marty Wolver's been in charge of our scouting department for the last, 11 years. And we do a great job with, because we have never been a large spender in the draft. We're always kind of, maybe towards the bottom a little bit, but you look at us and we're able to make trades. Ruben's able to take a lot of our pieces and make trades, or guys can come up to the big league. So I think we've definitely done a good job drafting and developing guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about you, though, Eric. You played on one of the biggest platforms in sports in New York. I have to ask you, though, man, how was it like playing for the Golden Eagles?
The Golden Eagles. Oh, the Rackets and Golden Eagles.
Yeah.
I was almost like, wait, who's that? That was a little different. That was towards the end of my career.
Yeah.
Playing Japanese baseball is definitely an experience that, you could sit for hours talking about it. But 2-hour bullet train ride north of Tokyo. We had a little baby at the time. big language barrier. Yeah, I think if I was in a team in Tokyo, I think it would be a lot better experience, just because you got a lot more different cultures. Where I was pretty much at, it was just pretty much straight Japanese, and it was just hard to get acclimated sometimes.
Yeah, would you do it again?
Oh, yeah, I wish I would have played well and got to stay out there and make some more cash, but that didn't happen. So definitely I would have done it again, yes.
Well, it's an experience, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's what life's all about.
All right, so I'm going to throw out a date to you. You accomplished something that not many people get to accomplish, Eric. July 29th,
yep.
2004, you hit for the cycle.
Yeah.
Take us through that day, and, how memorable was that for you?
Yeah, I was an extra guy that year, with the Mets, and Art Howe told me the day before he was going to let me play left field, give Cliff Floyd a day off. My first at-bat, I hit one towards the first baseman, kind of line shot, it was off his glove, and I beat it out. So I'm not thinking nothing of it. Next up, time up, I hit a kind of a fading liner towards the left field line. The guy dove and didn't catch it, and I got a double. And then the next time up, it was the homer. So I was 3-for-3. And now coming up for my fourth at bat, getting later in the game, the score, I think we were up 9-3. So it wasn't, I think I told Don Baylor at the time, I said, if I hit this, I'm going 3. It doesn't matter where it is. So, I end up hooking one down to the right field corner. Perfect time. And Mike Cameron was on first, and I kept running, and Mike was scoring, and Nick Johnson was playing first base at the time. And he kind of glanced home to see kind of where Mike was going, so kind of hesitated, and I was able to slide into third with the triple. So, I was hit him in the right spots, and I got lucky.
Wow! So it was really only like one hit away from a perfect.
Yeah, I did the single, double, triple, homer, and then I walked actually my fifth at bat.
Wow.
Yeah.
One base five times. You got to love that.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome. I actually remember watching that game live on TV, and I was like, nice.
Yeah,
nice.
It was nice.
Time somebody
to do it. I didn't spend that much time in the majors, so to do something like that, it's make you look back, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, listen, man, that year, it was a memorable year, man. But people in New York remember you. They remember your name. So
definitely one of the rebuilding years. With the Mets kind of in a, it was definitely limbo years.
Yeah. Oh, well, listen, we enjoyed having you there. So,
Eric, let me throw this one out to you. You know, you indicated you're doing some scouting in the high school and the collegiate levels. Is that right?
Yeah, correct.
All right. Stories come out, of course, last week about PED usage.
Yeah.
And here we go again, all over again.
Oh, yeah.
How is that kind of thing affecting the scouting situation down there in the lower levels?
Not as much. I mean, I think maybe years prior, you have some suspicions here and there. But I think for the most part, it's just you're always going to have guys that are going to want to find an edge, and they're going to do anything at all costs. And that, I mean, you look at that, that's in any type of business. That's in, you know, Wall Street or any type of business. Guys are always going to try to cut corners just to have that little bit of greed in them. But you got to, you know, that's where you scout the player out. You build a history with the player. You see if maybe anything fluctuates out of the normal.
Right.
But for the most part, I think it's a very, very, very small percentage. And, again, you just try to be aware of it. Your area guy tries to be aware of it, and you go from there. I think we don't concern ourselves that closely with it because it is such a small percentage, I believe.
I mean, that's good to hear because, I mean, I think many of us have the impression, because we hear it so many times, that this stuff, you know, that it's very, very commonplace even in high schools, and that's very, very disconcerting.
Oh, definitely. I think it is maybe at some of the – I think not so much in baseball. Maybe it's in some other sports, but I don't know what the drug testing levels are at in other states and that type of stuff. And I know, you know, it could definitely become costly for high schools to implement a lot of that stuff. And
yeah.
You just hopefully kids are educated on it and they know how much bad it can do. And I think it's just – it's got to come from the top as far as just what the major sports are doing with their drug testing programs to show the players that, hey, this you can't be doing this stuff. It's not what it's about. Of course, everyone wants to do as well as they can, be the best they can,
absolutely.
You know, set your family up. But guess what? There's got to be some consequences with your actions if you choose to do some of this stuff.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, and it was a shame because, you know, we all thought when some of the guys from the steroid era were starting to dwindle out of baseball that we'd see, you know, a lot less usage of that stuff.
Yeah,
and we have
think,
a lot
you know
of these
what?
Minor...
I think you're going to constantly – I think it's not going to really go – I think you're constantly going to see kind of guys pop up here and there because, I mean, you watch some of these interviews, the guy's not going to name names, but, you know, even in other sports, guys talking about their – this, and they some of them still don't – you can tell they're not even coming fully clean.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, when they have their excuse for it or this and that. So I think you're always going to have, you know, writers or investigative writers – get to the bottom of something when they know someone's not telling the truth and they can find a story out there.
Yeah.
It's a shame. We've spoken about it a lot here on Fan Junkies Radio. And you know what? Mike and I just got into a big conversation about it after the Hall of Fame, you know, voting going down with, you know, the bond.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically squeezing those votes out of guys like a Fred McGriff who really could have, you know, should have deserved to have gotten in this year. So
you're right. Jack Morris, McGriff, you know, Lee Smith, these guys that, you know, spent years and Dale Murphy. You know, you think about it, Dale Murphy should probably be a first. You know, he's had a great career.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. You know,
absolutely.
But then again, it's still affecting Major League Baseball even after all those years. So it's a shame.
Yeah, one day I think it'll go away. Hopefully.
Hopefully soon, Eric, man.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, really.
We'd like to talk about it no more.
I guess the last question I would throw out to you, just going back to the Phils at this particular time, there's been a lot of talk and conversation. I mean, we're pretty much tapped out as far as money goes. The team that we have right now, that's what we're going to the field with on opening day, pretty much.
I would definitely think so. I mean, we've always spent the money, but I think we operate in some type of budget consciousness as well. So
yeah.
I think you get to July and we're in it and we're a piece away or there's something out there. I mean, we've always been a team that's going to do what it takes. So, but right now I think Ruben likes the team and where it's at and we'll just let the season play out and see what happens.
Gotcha. I'm good with it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I think it's a solid lineup. And again, it's about guys performing somewhat up to, they don't have to have career years, just got to have something close to what their average years of what they should be doing.
There was some concern about Ruiz. Is he copacetic to start the?
Yeah, he's you know, he had gotten suspended, so I think he's missing the first 25 games. So luckily that's all the games he has to miss this year, and he ends up coming back healthy and whatnot. So hopefully, you know, we can sprinkle in, you know, Kratz and whoever else is in the mix to catch those games at the beginning of the year.
like many fans, I kind of feel that the X factor here is we need a healthy Chase Utley.
Yeah, you're right. You know, and Ryan Howard's going to continue to get healthy. You know, Jimmy's in the lineup every day. We got a new center fielder. We got hopefully Dominic Brown and Darren Ruff can figure out something in left field. And you got Delman Young, who we kind of took a flyer on. Hopefully he can get lightning in a bottle. And
right.
Yeah, I like the team. And Michael Young can be a professional hitter that he is. So you got some pieces to like, and it's just about going out and playing now.
Yep.
Yeah, listen, I really don't feel bad for you guys in Philadelphia with your outfit.
We appreciate
the Mets got a lot of nice players coming up, though. So, you know, they're in a little bit of a rebuilding phase, but they definitely have some pieces coming.
Definitely. I'm very excited about the future with the Mets. I think Olsson's doing a good job right now. So we'll see what
nice.
Happens. All right, Eric, man, as always, honestly, thank you so much for joining.
No problem, guys. Enjoyed it.
Yeah, this has been terrific. I appreciate it. And I got to tell you, I am just, yesterday was the Super Bowl. Football season's over. I am stoked for a little bit of baseball.
Definitely. I'm excited, too.
Yeah, we'll try to get you on after the MLB season. So
yeah, anytime, guys.
Talk about my Mets being in second place this year. So.
Yeah. Hey, have a good one.
Thanks, Eric.
All right, guys. See ya.
Bye-bye.
Good job.
Eric Vollant, great guy. I've known him for quite a few years now. You know, seriously, just, you know, he has so much knowledge on the game. It's great.
Well, down to earth, too. I really like, you know, I love when we can get a guest on it and they give it to us straight. You know, they give it to us honest, and I love that.
Well, here's a little trivia for you, Mike.
Go ahead.
August 31st, the Phillies traded him to the Reds. Do you know who they traded him for?
Yes, in fact, Kelly Stinnett.
Our Friday's guest, yeah.
Yes. I know. I found that somewhat ironic when I was looking that over the
board. I set that all up that way.
Yeah, you're brilliant, man. You're brilliant.
Hey, listen, as long as you say it, because now we have it recorded, so. Uh-huh. So you never said it.
That'll be coming back as a soundbite to kick me in the tail later on.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. No doubt about it. Yeah, you know what? I really like his analysis of both the Phillies and the Mets. I think he really nailed it on the head talking about, you know, the health issues for the Phillies.
Yep.
You know, them not being injured, you know, is going to be something of them competing this year. Same thing with the Mets. They might not be able to compete this year, but their future is very, very bright. So
I agree with you 100%. I'm going to be honest with you, Jonathan. I actually have, and when I was talking to Eric there, I was being very honest as an analyst and as a Phillies fan.
Yeah.
From the standpoint that if I were a Mets fan, I'd be more optimistic about your team than I am right now about my own Phillies team.
Yeah.
Simply because of the fact that, as I pointed out to him, this is where I think a lot of Phillies fans are coming from. I think Phillies fans are looking at it and going, our time is just about past.
I think the Phillies will compete this year. But as Eric Vaughn said, it's going to be all based on health.
Yep.
You know, you got a lot of mid to late 30-year-olders on the team now. You know, you got a lot of question marks and guys like Delman Young. So, you know, now is the time. I think you got about a year or two window now, Mike, to really compete, try to do something with that. After that, you're going to be into a big, big, big rebuilding phase here at Philadelphia.
You might be being optimistic there by saying a year or two.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm going to give you that. I am going to give them that. But honestly, it's all going to fall on what happens this season.
Yeah, I agree.
If they compete, everybody's healthy, I think these players will come back and try to compete again next year. But, you know, big question mark, Mike.
Absolutely.
You know, big question marks for both of our teams, you know, for the Mets and the Phillies. I think I think it's the Phillies' time right now to get something done, but I think the future is a lot brighter for the New York Mets with all the moves that Olsson made and bringing in guys like Zach Wheeler, you know, getting Travis d'Arnaud and all these other prospects lined up. I think that they're going to have a very, very good team, you know, the Mets. It may not be this year, it may not be next season, it may not be even the season after that, but the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh years with these young guys, man, I think they're going to be really good, Mike.
I couldn't agree more with you, Jonathan, on your assessment. I really do. You know, and I don't want anybody out there who's a Phillies fan who hears me and says, oh, my gosh, you know, you turncoat. No, I'm not being a turncoat. I'm being honest. I'm being realistic. You know, the bottom line is I think the Mets have a lot more to look forward to for the future
absolutely.
Than currently the Phillies do unless something really, really dramatically changes.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? As the Phillies were competing over the last bunch of seasons and winning a World Series, you know, the Mets were trying to rebuild, Mike. And you know what? With a long rebuilding phase, that's what happens. I mean, like Eric said, you know, nobody heard anything about the A's, and then look what the A's did last season, Mike. You know, the A's were a minor league team in the majors for teams like the Yankees to just pick their best players from. They're not doing that no more. And look what they did. They were able to rebuild. Every team eventually has to go through it, Mike, and eventually the Phillies are going to have to go through a rebuilding phase. So.
And what do you think, Jonathan? Here's my assessment on it, you know, when you start talking sports. I think it takes longer to rebuild in Major League Baseball than it does in just about any other sport.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You can put together an NHL team.
Yeah.
You can put together an NBA team a hell of a lot faster than you can a Major League Baseball team.
Yeah.
It might take a little bit longer with even a football team.
Yeah.
But in both basketball and hockey, you can put together a winning team.
Yeah.
Almost in a year.
Yeah. Well, you know what the thing is in basketball. You know what you draft a guy in college, you really don't have a minor league to put him in to develop him. He'll probably sit at the end of your bench, or if he's a higher pick, he's going to get playing time. So he's going to have time to develop in front of everybody's eyes.
Right.
It might feel longer for the people being fans of that team and being able to watch the guy try to develop and mature on the court. But in baseball, no, you have single A, triple A, double A, whatever. You know, you throw these guys down there, they stay down there for years at a time. You move up the ranks from single A to triple A, and they try to get into Major League Baseball. It does take a lot longer than it does in other leagues.
Right, but yeah. See, that's why I like the whole movement and development of the D leagues in NBA.
I agree, and you know what? I think they really need to add more teams. I think
absolutely.
There should be teams for every team.
Absolutely.
You know, I really agree that the NBDL should be the official minor league of the NBA, and I think they need to have a team for every professional team. And we spoke to Chucky Brown about that, I believe, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, we did. And we can get in – well, and we talked, I think, as well to –
Willie Burton.
Well, I'm thinking of my buddy from when we were talking NCAA.
Lee Coyne.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, Lee
You're absolutely right when you start talking about developmental issues and growing sports and growing teams. The NCAA basketball is a tremendous place to be picking from, but far too often we're getting them way too young.
Yeah.
And we're blowing them out way too early.
Absolutely.
So that's where I think the D leagues come into play and would be a very, very effective place.
Well, you know, it would have been very, very effective for teams like the Charlotte Bobcats.
Yeah,
you know, those are teams that could really benefit from the NBDL. Same thing like the A's and other low market teams who are trying to find an image benefit from the minor leagues in baseball. So,
absolutely.
You know. But anyway, it was great to have Eric on. He's a very good friend of ours here, and you know,
many thanks to him. Many thanks.
Yeah, just a bowl of knowledge. So.
Yep.
We appreciate that. But let's talk a little bit about hockey, Mike. And it's time to talk about our hat trick challenge here. We have yet to make a league. We will. So everybody listen in. We'll get you on that eventually. But if you go to hattrick.nhl.com, they have a hat trick challenge presented by Enterprise. And every day they ask you three questions. And today's three questions are, who will win between the Carolina Hurricanes and the Toronto Maple Leafs? Mike, who did you pick?
I got the Maple Leafs on this one.
I have the Maple Leafs as well. Who will win between the Dallas Stars and the Colorado Avalanche? Mike, who do you got?
I picked the Avalanche.
I picked the Avalanche as well.
Uh-oh.
Now, they usually have questions like that, and then the third question is usually nothing of that sort. So here we go now. Will Taylor Hall of the Edmonton Oilers register at least 1 point in tonight's game against the Vancouver Canucks? Mike.
And this is the ringer question.
Yes.
I answered yes.
I answered no.
Ah.
Taylor Hall will not score a point against the Vancouver Canucks. But this is what the... You know, this is what the hat trick challenge is. If you get all three correct, you get a hat trick. And this is what Mike and I are going to do for the rest of the NHL season. Towards the NHL season, we're going to tally our votes. So far, we both are terrible, and we have no hat tricks. I thought I got one on Saturday, Mike, but it didn't count because we're only doing what? Game day, right?
Yeah, correct.
Excuse me. Show. You know what? Show day we're doing. Excuse me.
Yeah. Now, I've been playing for over a week, and so far I've had one hat trick. So, folks, if you think this is easy, it is not. And I'll be perfectly honest with you. I kind of consider myself above your average NHL fan because I do watch more games, and I really do try to keep on top of it.
But it doesn't make you any less mediocre when choosing stuff, Mike.
Absolutely correct. Thank you, Jonathan. You, as I just said, you are brilliant.
Oh, twice in one show. Look at that. Look at that. Twice in one show.
I love
All right, real quick.
No, this is not easy to do. It really isn't.
Yeah, no, it's not. But seriously.
It does make it fun. I got to tell you, it makes it fun to track these games when they're going on live. I mean, like tonight, to be perfectly honest with you, would I really, really care about the Dallas Stars and the Colorado Avalanche? No, but tonight I'm going to take a little bit of interest.
No, but a real hockey fan like I would, so.
Oh, okay.
No, but it is a lot of fun.
What are you talking about? You're in bed, man. What? No,
I'm not. My bedtime is 10, Mike. I can watch at least an hour of the Stars Avalanche game.
All right. Mom, you'll let you stay up. I got you.
And it's called DVR, my friend.
Okay.
DVR. Actually, my mom stays up later than I do, so.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. Speaking about moms, I got to say, I like Sidekick's mom.
Yeah, isn't she terrific?
She's awesome.
Isn't she terrific?
She's awesome.
We had her on. We had her on live a year ago at the for the Super Bowl show. She was here. She was here from St. Louis. In fact, unfortunately, she couldn't be here yesterday. That's the first time in 3 Super Bowls.
Wow.
That she could not come in from St. Louis to be with us, and we missed her.
Yeah.
So shout out to Mrs. Sidekick's mom, Carol Weimer.
Yeah, she's pretty cool. I like her.
Yeah, she is.
I like her. Anyway, let's talk a little football real quick because we wanted to get to something before, so we'll get to it real quick here, Mike, talking NFL Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
A lot of list of players we spoke about, Strahan, Jerome Bettis, we thought they were going to get in, but they didn't. Going in is offensive tackles Larry Allen and Jonathan Ogden. Mm-hmm. Warren Sapp gets in, first year on a ballot, I believe, right, Mike?
I believe so.
Or was the second year?
Yeah, I believe so, Jonathan.
Okay, also going in, Bill Parcells, Chris Carter, Curly Culp, and Dave Robinson.
Yep.
Mike, how did Jerome Bettis not get in again?
Well, yeah, I know you've really been pushing for it. I for one, kind of thought that Strahan should have gotten in over Sapp.
Yeah, well, I agree to that, but at the same time, as I told you, Sapp's been retired longer, so I didn't think – I would have liked to have seen Strahan go. I thought he was a much better player than Warren Sapp was. But at the same time, Sapp was retired longer, and I think they really look at that when they go in.
Do they look at that, or is this more of a sympathy vote?
I don't think it was a sympathy vote. You know, Warren Sapp was a good player. Should Warren Sapp be a Hall of Fame player? Yeah, why not? I think he should be. He won a Super Bowl. That goes towards really good stats that he has. But I think Michael Strahan is a much better player than Warren Sapp was. I think next year Michael Strahan's going to get in right away.
I do too.
I don't think he's going to go over 2 years being on the ballot. I think he's going to get in the second year. Good for Jonathan Ogden getting in, one of the premier offensive linemen that we've ever probably seen, Mike.
Yeah.
Same thing for Larry Allen. At the same time, I am upset about Jerome Bettis not getting. I really think he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, and this is what, his third or fourth year now on the ballot?
Third. I think third, yes.
I believe he needs
to... I don't have the numbers right up in front of me, but I believe when we were talking about it before, I think I had indicated this was his third time around.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a quick question. Are there any there that you're particularly happy about?
Oh, Bill Parcells.
Absolutely.
Bill Parcells. I think Bill Parcells could have been in years ago.
Absolutely.
Great to see the tuna get in. I'm very happy about that. You know, what I can't understand is Chris Carter getting in.
Okay, why?
I don't know, man. I used to watch Chris Carter all the time. I wasn't a fan. I just didn't see Hall of Fame caliber player there. I mean, you know what? I'm sorry. I know we're going by positions here and it doesn't count, but I would have put Bettis in over Chris Carter.
How many years? Now, he was on the ballot for quite a few years in a row, I believe.
Yeah, I believe this was his fourth year, I believe. So.
Yeah.
I think. I could be wrong. Oh, no, it was sixth time. He was
there you go. That's what I thought. I thought it had been multiple times.
Yeah. I like Chris Carter. Phenomenal talent. Unfortunately, I saw other people. Tim Brown, I think, should have got in. But that's just me. I don't know how other people feel. Not saying I don't like Chris Carter. Not saying he was a phenomenal talent, especially in Minnesota. But, I like Tim Brown better. So.
DeBartolo, I thought DeBartolo should have gotten him.
Oh, yeah, Eddie DeBartolo? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, you know what? Even Art Modell. I mean, you know what? Art Modell, if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have Monday Night Football. So
Modell will get in next year, I believe.
But it was definitely, the tune is time to get in. So glad for Bill Parcells. Congratulations to Bill Parcells, who, if it wasn't for him, the Jets would still be nobody.
The comment that I put up on our Frat House Facebook page the other day was that, for the most part, I'd say it was a good Hall of Fame class.
It was. I listen, I like the class. I'm not going to say none of these guys don't deserve to be in there because they do. I just would have picked other players first over that went in.
Agreed. That's kind of where I was with it.
But congratulations to the Hall of Fame class, NFL.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to seeing them go in.
Absolutely. All right. Let's shift our gears here to the NBA real quick, Mike. Last couple of shows ago, we spoke about Rajon Rondo getting injured, being out for the season. Big blow to the Celtics, but it doesn't seem to be that way because they have won four in a row without Rajon Rondo last night, beating the Los Angeles Clippers, who's lost six of the last eight, 106 to 104. What's going on, man? Clippers got a lot of injuries now, huh?
Tale of two cities here, huh? You know, it was funny because when Rondo went down, what was it, last week, and we talked about it a little bit right here on Fans Rookies Radio.
Yeah.
Even the media was crying the blues and saying, oh, my gosh, this might be the end of Boston. In fact, I think even yourself, Jonathan, you said, wow, I don't know if Boston can come back from this. You got to wonder, winning four in a row at this point, is this adrenaline speaking? In other words, are we going to see, you know, is this going to be a long-term effect that it's going to take a little bit of time for Rondo being missing to actually have its impact? Maybe some of these guys are playing over their head in an effort to overcompensate.
Yeah. You know what? It hasn't really been anybody stepping up to take over. Courtney Lee is starting point guard right now with Rajon Rondo out. He only had 7 points yesterday. But you know what? They're getting a lot of production from their bench. Jason Terry, 13 points.
Yes.
Jeff Green, 14 points. And Leandro Barbosa finally starting to shoot the ball a little bit better, adding 14 as well. So that was a big, big, key for the Celtics, winning yesterday's game and winning the last four games. But at the same time, you know what? Los Angeles, without Chris Paul, bruised right kneecap, and also Jamal Crawford broke his nose in that game. So that's, if he doesn't play, that's a big 20-plus points off the bench.
You got it. Interesting, though, when you do contrast it to the Clippers, as you point out, who are 4-6 in their last 10 and have lost two in a row. This was a team that, just a week ago, 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago, you and I were both saying, holy smokes, look at what the Clippers are doing out there in the Pacific Division.
Yeah.
What's the story here, Jonathan?
They're missing Chris Paul.
Yep.
They're missing a lot of other people. And, that's what it is right now. It's, last 6 of 8 they've lost, they'll get back on track. I'm not worried about them.
Okay.
I think they're one of the finer teams in the league. So, they have Grant Hill off the bench, Lamar Odom. They still have some really good players, Caron Butler. They'll be good. Really not worried about them.
3 games ahead right now of Golden State. I don't see Golden State being near as good a team as the Clippers.
No, they're not. They're not, but it takes swings like this for it to get up in the standings, and Golden State's still playing very, very effective basketball. They have a very good team, and I think towards the end of it, you'll see that it'll be a battle between the Warriors and the Clippers. I honestly still believe that, Mike, and I've said that many times before. So.
And I'm just sitting here looking at the standings and staying in that Pacific Division. Holy smokes, I didn't realize how bad it had gotten. You're in my favorite team. The Lakers are 11.5 games out.
Yeah, they won a couple of games. They're getting back up near 500. They were 14 games back. 14 games back at one point, but still 11.5. We're in February now. It's time for them to shut up and start playing. And a couple more losing streaks are really going to just take them out of the equation. So
stick a fork in them. Stick a fork in them if that happens.
Not yet. But if they go on another losing streak, stick a fork in them. They've won two in a row so far right now, but Warriors 4 in a row. So they have a lot of catching up to do.
Yeah, just you'll know this right off the top of your head, I'm sure. All-Star Game, when is that coming up?
February. It's usually around my birthday. My birthday is Friday. So I think it's right. I think it's the 15th to the 17th, the next weekend.
Okay.
It used to be on the weekend of my birthday, but they moved it up. So.
Okay, so it's right after Valentine's Day. Gotcha.
Yes, and speaking about basketball, talking about Celtics and Clippers, Sporting News had a report here citing anonymous sources that Clippers are trying to acquire Kevin Garnett from the Celtics. Mike.
A little bit surprising there. Maybe not though. What's your read on it?
Surprised from the Clippers end going after Garnett. I'm not surprised from the Celtics end if it happens trying to get rid of Garnett. I think they need a little bit of depth. They need some younger players, the Celtics. But at the same time, with injuries hitting Los Angeles, and we're not saying this is true, it's just anonymous sources. But at the same time, with them getting, you know, Chauncey Billups still out, Chris Paul out, Jamal Crawford might miss a few games now with a broken nose. You know, you trade guys like Eric Bledsoe, Caron Butler, even Grant Hill, that's a lot of depth that they're going to need. So
that's a lot of money left over on that contract if they were to pick him up.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, $23.5 million.
Yeah, 2 years left on his contract. So
that is a lot of cash.
But he has a no-trade clause, so it's ultimately it's going to go in his pocket, you know what, if he's going to want to move or not. So
this is a guy that's getting older, too.
Yes. He's 36 now, going on 37.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, let me ask you a question, Jonathan. Why in the world would the Clippers even be interested?
I think they're worried. That, you know, with their upfront size right now, I think it would be a bad move for Los Angeles to do it. You know, DeAndre Jordan hasn't been playing that great from the center spot. Blake Griffin, he's been okay. He hasn't been anything like, you know, he was last season.
Right.
You don't hear a lot about him anymore. At the same time, you know what, Caron Butler is playing really good from the small forward spot. Willie Green has been a little off, but you're going for Kevin Garnett. You're not going for a guard. So it's you got to wonder if they're trying to bring in a little extra scoring to propel them towards the playoffs and another big body for the playoffs, Mike.
Is this a Band-Aid for them, or are they looking at a rent-a-player for the season and then try to move him again?
I honestly, with 2 years left in his contract, I don't even see how they would be able to move Kevin Garnett.
I don't think anybody would pick him up, right.
Not unless they get a lot of salary.
Right.
Or they do a bad contract for a bad contract swap. That's the only thing I can think. So.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. I don't know, man. To me, it doesn't seem like a good move.
It doesn't. I would not like that move for LA at all. So, and that's our opinion, Mike.
Well, and that's what matters here on
Fantasy. That's what matters. Yeah, absolutely.
That's what matters.
I mean, you know what? It would be nice to know what Clippers fans think about that. So for next show, give us a call, 347-237-5373. We'll be back on Wednesday, Mike.
Yes, we will.
For continuation of MLB week, we're going to talk about all of the baseball teams in MLB. We're going to throw out some of our predictions on some of the, you know, the conferences and see who's going to be the best in each division. And ultimately, then we're going to throw out and see who's going to make it to the World Series, Mike.
I want to hear from our listeners. I want to hear from fans. I want to hear from our folks out there that are listening in. If you're listening, be prepared to call, because that's a show I think we should try to make as interactive as possible.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interactive Wednesday. So
there you go. I like that.
Well, Mike, that's basically about the end of it. We only have a couple minutes left, so there's really no reason to get into anything else, because you and I, we like to ramble. We like to talk a lot. So no reason to get into something where we can't throw out our opinions, Mike, right?
I hear you, because I would just talk too long.
Well, you and I both. But anyway, once again, we'd like to thank former Mets and Phillies outfielder Eric Valente for joining us today. It was a real treat to have him on. Friday show, former Yankees and Diamondbacks catcher Kelly Stinnett will be joining us, who was traded for Eric Valente. Nice trivia question. We'll bring that up to Kelly on Friday as well. As always, FrideHouseSports.net. Check out our very own Mike McShane, sidekick. Maybe even sidekick's mom. She might even make an appearance on FrideHouseSports.net. Who knows?
She's over there right now, actually.
That'd be great. 5 minutes at the Frat House every Thursday on YouTube and also on FridaySports.net. But you can also catch it right here on Fan Junkies Radio on Saturdays, 3 p.m.
Yep.
And then also tomorrow, 2 p.m., second episode of Wrestle Chat Radio.
There you go.
With Brett Clint Daniel and myself. Be hosting again. We'll be talking a lot about the whole Bret Hart Triple H situation and all the comments that Bret Hart's been throwing out against Triple H, as well as results from tonight's Monday Night Raw and so much else.
There you go.
So we're really looking forward to that.
That's a good new program right there. Everybody's got to be tuning into that if you're a wrestling fan.
Absolutely. And as always, FanJunkies.net. Sports social networking at its best, 100% free. Get over there, chat with your fellow fans. And always, we have chat rooms. We have chat rooms for the Flyers games. We have chat rooms for the Ranger games. We'll have chat room for any game. If you want to host a chat on FanJunkies.net, you can email us by going to FanJunkies.net, scrolling down, hitting the Contact Us form. Get to us, and we'll set you up with a chat.
You got it. That's easy.
So, as always, Chick McShane, I'm Jonathan Ragus. We'll see you all Wednesday for FanJunkies Radio.
See you then.
Maybe you're a 49ers fan in Jacksonville or a Jets fan in Houston, and you're looking to connect with fellow fans from hundreds or thousands of miles away. Look no further than FanJunkies.net. FanJunkies.net is a social networking site dedicated to fans of every team and every league. Connect with baseball, football, basketball, and hockey fans from throughout the country and throughout the world. Get the latest news, take polls, and interact in live chats on game day. And best of all, it's absolutely free to join. Sign up today at FanJunkies.net. FanJunkies.net, where sports meets social networking.